Welcome to More to Come, PW Comics World's weekly podcast on graphic novel and comics publishing. I'm Meg Lemke, I'm PW's comics and graphic novels reviews editor. You can check us out online at publishersweekly.com/comics. And also, as you hear regularly from my co-hosts and various social media platforms, and I encourage you to Google them and find out where. So this week on More to Come, I'm really delighted to be talking to Kendra Wallow, who's the publisher of Graphic Mundi, an imprint at Penn State University Press. And we're going to chat about graphic medicine, the broader mission of this imprint, the lists she's developed there, things like the importance of publishing global voices, and what it's like to be a comics imprint at a scholarly institution. So no small scope for my ambitions for this half hour-ish conversation, but we'll see how we do. So Kendra, welcome to More to Come.
Hi, Meg. Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. So the imprint at Penn State morphed out of the Graphic Medicine series. Is that correct? Can you walk us through like the evolution of Graphic Mundi and also why it rebranded into that?
Yeah, these are all good questions. So we started publishing the graphic medicine book series in, I think, 2015. We published our first book. That was intended to be a primarily academic line of publications. We were intending to publish mostly academic monographs about the genre of graphic medicine. But as we sent out calls for projects, we started getting graphic novels as submissions themselves. So graphic novels in the graphic medicine genre, and thought, why not publish graphic novels? And so we ended up publishing more graphic novels in the graphic medicine series than academic scholarship, I think partly because academic scholarship was still catching up to the medium of comics and the genre of graphic medicine. So there wasn't as much academic analysis to publish at that point in time. Developed a pretty strong list of graphic medicine graphic novels in the graphic medicine series. And then as time went on, and this is actually my first time as a publisher publishing graphic novels, and to be honest, reading graphic novels. I was trained in French literature, and due to a number of factors, I just never caught on to the comics craze and the graphic novel craze. So this was entirely new for me, and boy, what a joy. It's like a window opened to be exposed to all of the wonderful work published in comics and graphic novels, and then to be able to publish those in turn, such an honor. Anyway, so as my vision for graphic medicine progressed, and as I started attending the Frankfurt International Book Fair to start looking at the international landscape of graphic novel publishing and try to acquire some translation rights, I realized that there was so much available in the way of prospective translations, and also the kinds of projects that sort of took graphic medicine to a different scale. And so some of the last graphic novels we published in the graphic medicine series had to do with less bodily focused, medicine focused topics, and more about the trauma of war, for example, with Algérienne, which is the story of women's role in the Algerian War by some French creators. And then I thought, and then we saw so much potential for continuing and building on this line of graphic novels that it didn't make sense to have this sort of hybrid set of publications in graphic medicine, the identity of which was not entirely clear. So we thought, let's just make this a brand new imprint, call it Graphic Mundi, the Latin for Graphic Mundi, obviously meaning worlds, right? So to convey the idea that, we're bringing out books that represent a range of diverse perspectives throughout the worlds, and we wanted to make sure that readers understood that the offerings of Graphic Mundi were not going to be entirely medically specific, but medically specific in addition to so many other levels of topics that relate to us as embodied human beings, if that makes sense. So, and mostly it was a marketing decision. We felt like it made sense to, this would now be a fully trade line of publications, whereas graphic medicine was some academic monographs that were not trade publications. They were published on short discounts, and then some graphic novels that were published on trade discounts weren't quite sure there was clarity there in the marketplace. So we've just sort of shifted all of our graphic novel publications into a trade graphic novel imprint called Graphic Mundi. And that was the that's sort of how it got started. And our first publication, as I'm sure you know, in Graphic Mundi is COVID Chronicles, the anthology of comics about the pandemic. We were planning to launch Graphic Mundi in the fall of 2020. And so, which requires a lot of our first titles were going to be published in the fall of 2020, which requires a lot of obviously marketing and branding preparation. But then, we found ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, not the ideal time to launch a new line of graphic novels. So we postponed our launch of those graphic novels to the following spring of 2021. And that gave us time to pull together this anthology of COVID comics while the world was sort of in lockdown and readjusting to the new reality. I spent a summer working with creators and collecting those comics. It was a hard time for all of us, but one of the most magical editorial moments of my life, I think. Just focusing in on that and focusing in on the work that creators were spontaneously producing in response to the situation we all found ourselves in. And the anthology COVID Chronicles is a prime example of what graphic medicine is, the layered nature of graphic medicine, the fact that, yeah, we're dealing with a virus that's affecting us all in very, very medically specific ways. But at the same time, we just saw the world fall apart in terms of all of the reverberations socially, politically, environmentally, and so forth. And that's really what, that's how a lot of people view the importance of graphic medicine. And that's why I think it's great to have this anthology as the anchoring book in our series.
I feel I should pause to say we should really define graphic medicine in brief. Like we're talking about it in a way that I think, and I brought it up as if everybody listening knows, but I think it's really in the term, right? It's comics about healthcare and illness, but more and more broadly considered, like mental health, trauma, and then Graphic Mundi is doing this larger, it's more actually now just global comics, as well as still having a strong graphic medicine line.
Yes.
Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, that's all very, very accurate. I will say that there are in the global context, there are groups of graphic medicine folks working throughout the world. Japan has a really strong group of graphic medicine experts, Spain, and some other places. So graphic medicine is in fact an international movement. And if listeners want to learn more about graphic medicine, I encourage you to go to graphicmedicine.org, learn a lot about the who and the what of graphic medicine and get some good recommendations for graphic novel reading on the subject.
Yeah, because it's an international scholarly organization. And sorry, listeners, for the beep. That was our VPN for BLB, so I can file my reviews later. It started as a scholarly organization, but then the artists have somewhat followed suit, right, to c take on the mantle of this, to publish into it.
Yeah, I would say it was a coincidental marriage of artists and academics and practitioners, that trifecta. So, all working together at the same time as pioneers of graphic medicine to found this movement. So you have Ian Williams, who is a physician in the UK and an artist. You have N.K. Zurich on this side of the pond, who is a healthcare provider and an artist. And then you have academics like Susan Squire, Professor Emerita from Penn State, where I am located, who is not necessarily an artist, but works pushes a lot of the analysis and academic conversation of graphic medicine going. Those were some of the main pioneers of the movement.
I'm very fond of MK, and we've reviewed her work in the past, particularly around care and the AIDS epidemic. Really incredible comics. And you are mentioning Susan Squire. So the something I asked you about when we were in San Diego that just continues to fascinate me because I came out of some period of scholarly publishing myself is whether the trade list goes through peer review. And maybe let's just have that conversation again. So the did the scholarly work under the series go through peer review and the trade list didn't? And like, what's the situation now with how is the imprint situated in the mandate of the university as
Yeah,
above?
that's a good question. So initially, graphic medicine was set up as an academic series within the PSU Press imprint. All of those titles went to the faculty board for approval. Most, if not all, university presses have faculty boards who govern all of our publications. And that was a little, it was a little dicey, I will say, that so the first book in the graphic medicine series was the Graphic Medicine Manifesto, a collection of essays by academics and practitioners of graphic medicine. An academic work that was peer reviewed, came to the committee with peer reports in hand and was heartily approved. When it came to pitching some of the graphic novels, it was kind of hard for the committee to know what to do with those. And also they weren't, I had not peer reviewed them because we were considering them trade publications. In university press publishing, you can kind of make a distinction that trade works don't always necessarily have to be peer reviewed, whereas academic short discount works do. That didn't quite work in my favor because I didn't have a strong enough pitch really to convince this committee, who was really unfamiliar with graphic novels, to that this made sense for our brand. And so we rethought things and decided that we would not be then taking forward the graphic novels because they were trade publications. However, it's a little it's it that's a little I don't think it was the best solution, which is again argues for why we just shifted into a separate imprint. The imprint has separate ISBNs from PSU Press. The spines of these books bear Graphic Mundi, not PSU Press. So, and this is often something that happens in university press world. A full trade imprint with a separate ISBN, a separate imprint titled the imprint, can get can I don't want to say get around peer review, but can forego peer review because there is that distance from the academic imprint. So that's another reason why. So none of these books are peer reviewed, to be quite honest. I have an advisory board for Graphic Mundi, and then of course I have a lot of I have networks in the field who can advise me more informally on books that we publish, but we're not doing the formal peer review with a form of, a list of questions that reviewers need to respond to, generally speaking, for our graphic novels.
Yeah, and for listeners, just to give some background about the questions I'm asking about, which are right away in the weeds about scholarly publishing and trade publishing, most books you're going to pick up at the bookstore aren't peer reviewed either. This is making it more like a Pantheon or Dharnan Quarterly or Fantagraphics or just Penguin Press. Any place you'd see a regular trade book, it goes through an editorial process. But scholarly books from university press go through a very rigorous process, much like a scholarly paper in The Lancet or Journal, where they go through to other scientists or scholars in a field. And I actually published a comic book at a university press for the first time when I was at Teachers College Press. I published a book called To Teach by William Ayers and Ryan Alexander Tanner. And it did go through peer review. So I was just curious because we peer reviewed all of our titles there, even the trade titles. It slows things down. I think it's interesting just from
Yeah.
perspective of being in the market of comics. I also think it's interesting that you're defining scholarly as short discount. Like that's like a practical distinction, right? That it depends on how you, that's about how you sell it, but how you acquire them is also more about this sort of broader idea of what is scholarly and what is a scholarly press and their place in university. And it's a whole other topic maybe for another time, but I think it's very interesting. Because it does sound like, regardless of whether it goes through some of the hoops of peer review, the books do benefit from being at a university in terms of course adoption, right? I'll let you answer more, but I meant to follow up the question about defining graphic medicine with who are some of the readers of graphic medicine, which includes academics, right? And librarians, or who have you seen pick up these works in the field? I know there's a lot of variants, for example.
I think the audience in many cases extends well beyond the field. So you have classroom usage for what we would call graphic medicine, graphic novels. You have academics and scholars who are studying and analyzing and producing scholarship about graphic medicine, graphic novels. But then you have a broad range of interested general readers who find out about the projects because they follow a particular artist, or somehow find out about these projects because they're available, in the general market. So I have found the audience to be very grassroots motivated. It's so much of it is word of mouth. I think the Graphic Medicine Collective does a really good job spreading the word and kind of straddling all of these different communities, which, you could look at as maybe a Venn diagram with practitioners, artists, academics, and then just general readers who are interested in all of these life and death topics, really, topics that are important to any human, really. That sounded pretentious.
Oh, no, it's not at all. I think it's so grounded in the reality of living in a body. You talked about Wendy being about being embodied and global in terms of its mission. I think that's so interesting because I've seen the language used sometimes of temporarily able-bodied. Like we're all, if we live long enough, we will become older and people get sick and people are touched by the illness of others. And also, it's very interesting thinking about the international mandate of the work, thinking about the world as a whole as a system, like a kind of the global body, right? Yeah, well, a lot of librarians really dig these titles. I know that like Matthew Ngo at Harvard is a big backer, Harvard Medical Library. Can you tell me more about these nuts and bolts? Like, what's a typical print run? Like, how do you get distributed? You distribute the trade list differently, right?
The press currently, we currently fulfill our own have our own fulfillment operations for our academic list. For Graphic Mundi, we decided to partner with Diamond as our North American distributor. So that's the current setup. And yeah, I forgot the rest of your question.
Oh,
Sorry.
it's okay. What is it like working with Diamond? Do you see these books getting picked up in the direct market and comic shops, like pretty broadly?
It's a process. I think I'd like to see more of our titles get into the direct market. I've seen a definite transition in comic shops over the years where and maybe I shouldn't generalize, but and I'd love to know your thoughts, but I'm seeing more and more of the kinds of books we publish in Graphic Mundi in shelves in your local comic shop. So there seems to be a trend in that direction for retailers stocking more of this kind of graphic novel rather than focusing exclusively on comics. But I do think, we're a young imprint. We've been publishing we're in our fourth year of publishing books. So we've seen a steady increase of titles going into comic shops, but I'd love to see that build a bit more
So we talked
over
about
time.
COVID Chronicles. Do you want to mention some of the other titles that have been really important to defining the imprint or others that have broken out? Did COVID Chronicles is pretty broadly reviewed, right?
Yeah, and COVID Chronicles has, relative to our other titles, has sold very well. We went back to reprint. Our initial print run was 5,000 copies, and then we went back to reprint fairly soon. My concern in putting that book together was just making sure we would publish it in time before the pandemic was no longer a concern. Sadly, that's not how the pandemic played out. It was with us and remains with us. So we've seen that book continues to sell, and I would say our next top seller behind COVID Chronicles is the trilogy, the Migrant Trilogy, whose name is escaping me, but I will come up with it in 2 seconds here. Hakim's Odyssey, the three book set, which documents of a Syrians Assyrian families. Odyssey and trying to escape, their war ravaged country and get to a safer place. It's an amazing set of books based on personal interviews with the people involved. And that book continues to sell really well. I'm hoping it's going into classrooms because it's a great story, an important story.
Oh, we have some background noise as usual sometimes on the podcast. That's an international work. So did you, that's translated, Hakim's
Yes.
Odyssey. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. We reviewed that title as well, and it's very moving. And that kind of gets at this like idea that you're publishing about the world at large, and like that's not specifically a medicine title. How did you come to acquire that work? And you know, what in general are you doing to connect with international publishers?
Yeah, so this publisher is Delcourt, and I have a really good relationship with the rights agent for Delcourt. I see her at the Angoulême Comics Rights Market every year when I can go, and I had previously been seeing her at Frankfurt. So sometimes you hit it off with another publisher because they have a similar vision. I was really keen to publish a migrant narrative, and I believe this was, if I'm not misremembering, this is one of the first migrant narratives to be available in North America at the time. And I'm not remembering, it was published several years ago. So it was sort of a new story for our audiences. And yeah, so that's a lot of it has to do with just really admiring Delcourt's list and what they were putting out and feeling that it kind of matched my vision for Mundi.
Did it come to you translated, or did you work with a translator?
We worked with a translator, hired a
Yeah.
translator. Yeah.
And you said you have a background in French literature, is that correct? So
Yeah.
yeah. Do you find that you're able to edit the translations with that background in particular? Like, do you feel like you're particularly savvy as a translation editor?
I do, not to toot my own horn here,
Okay,
but
go for it.
without French language expertise, it would be really hard to edit these translations. I feel like I do a lot of editorial work on them, and I've done some of the translations myself, which I'm really proud of. I think I've translated maybe four of these so far. Yeah, it's hard to be an editor of a language you don't understand. We have published translations from the German. We have two recent translations from the Czech language. And Spanish. These are not languages that I'm very, very strong in, but I can lean on some other folks to help me vet those translations.
One of the Czech works is Bald, right? That's coming up.
Yep.
Do you want to talk a little bit about what's coming out now and what we're looking forward to in the spring?
Yeah, I can certainly do that. Just take you through a couple seasons here. So the season we're currently in, fall 2024. Bald is on that list. It's coming, I believe its release month is November, either October or November. And this is by a set of Czech creators. Story of a young woman who was diagnosed with the autoimmune disease alopecia. Just coming to terms with losing your hair, how that affects your sense of identity, your relationships. And it is. Kind of takes her on a journey of self-understanding and self-acceptance, which I think is really empowering. I love this book. And I will say, as I hone my vision for Graphic Mundi titles, the word that keeps coming to my mind is resilience. There's so many stories of resilience out there needing to be published, and this is one that I would put into that category, and that's why I love it. A lot of the books we publish are tackling some kind of difficult challenges or topics, and the world can be a hard place to live in, and there are ways to deal with that. You can do some escapist reading, which I love, and I think is a great thing to do, but you can also stay with the trouble, as Donna Haraway would say, and face it. And I think the best way to learn from that is from these stories that demonstrate a lot of resilience. So that's a fall title. And another fall title that I'm really excited about, sadly, given the current state of affairs in Lebanon, is the collection of graphic journalism called Lebanon is Burning. Graphic journalism by Yazan Al-Saadi. And it's a collection of short comics about not about the current state of affairs, but about the events of the 1990s and the aughts, what we have informally referred to as the Arab Spring, where peoples in various countries in that region were sort of fighting for self-determinacy. I think that book now has sadly some new relevance, and I think it's an important read for this moment in time.
There's a different term, right? I actually got an email from a publicist about that the book is trying to put forward a different term than Arab Spring.
Yeah. And
What it's like
I'm honestly,
uprisings. I think it's more
yes.
generalized, so it's not, and maybe it's, I'm not entirely sure, but I thought that was interesting, and we hadn't heard that before in terms of our like style book, so I was informed by that. You know, it's, and I think the book is collecting work that was originally published on the fantastic site, the Nib. Is that also
Yeah.
correct?
Most of them were previously published in the Nib. Yeah. I think the problem with Arab Spring is that it's a Western-centric term, and part of the concern is that we've had so much Western-centric reporting on the events in the Middle East. This is grassroots reporting, which is, I think, is just amazing. Yeah, and then looking forward to the Spring 25, speaking of Czech translations, we have another translation by the artist of Bald, Štěpánka Slova. And she's written an amazing award-winning, by the way, both of these Czech graphic novels have won prestigious awards in the Czech Republic. She has a memoir about basically about her trials of dating and finding loving relationships with others, and some history of abuse, past abuse that she needs to overcome in order to be able to develop positive relationships with others. It's a very empowering story as well. I think it's something that a lot of us can identify with. Finding ourselves dating others who are emotionally unavailable, for example, and why exactly is that happening, and how can I change this? That's coming out in the spring of 2025. It's called Heartcore. And then in the fall, looking ahead, I'm really excited about a fall title by Maureen Burdock. So she's a repeat Graphic Mundi author. She had published her memoir, Queen of Snails, with us several years ago.
Oh yeah, that's a beautiful book. Is she German? She's German, right?
She is German, yeah. She's
That's very
currently.
detailed. It's got this like Alice in Wonderland detail.
Yeah. She's currently based in Santa Fe. I think she's an amazing creator. She's one of my favorite people. She's working on a graphic novel about insomnia. She has struggled with insomnia all of her life, and has sort of gone on her own personal odyssey to try to figure out how to treat this. In so doing, she's revealing a nexus of factors that are causing so many of us to not be able to sleep at night, having to do with, conventional medicine, having to do with big pharma, having to do with how we produce and consume our food, and that sort of thing. So it's an amazing story about one person's quest to just be able to sleep well and be healthy, told in the context of some of the larger problems of the world. And then the last book I'll mention, and that's tentatively called Sleep. We haven't quite finalized the title. The last book I'll mention is another translation from the French called Le Théorème du Vaquita, the principle of the vaquita, I would say. That's not the final title either, but I don't know if you know about the vaquita, these adorable porpoises in the Gulf of Mexico. They look like they're smiling.
I do not know about them, but it sounds like I'm
You
going to get to read about them.
need to read about them, and you need to look them up before that. I think they are almost extinct. They are in the double digits at this point. This is a book by a French activist who is very concerned about the state of the world's biodiversity, our ecosystems, and so forth. And it does end, it doesn't end as a it doesn't tell the story of complete doom and gloom. There are things we all can do, and that's sort of how he caps off his story, is about there is reason to have hope. And I love the art. I know your readers can't see the art, but I'll show you some of the art here. This will be translated, and it will be on our spring 2026 title to be determined, so keep your eye out for that.
That's looking a couple of years ahead. It sounds you're pretty actively acquiring right now. How many titles are you putting out each year and each season?
So we had been doing four and four each season, four fall, four spring. That's a lot. I'm now looking more at 2 to 4 per season. So in the spring, this coming spring, we'll have two titles, and then in the fall, at least two. It's going to vacillate between 2 to 4 a season, so between 4 to 8 a year.
So when you say it's a lot because you have the rest of the press, right? Because you also acquire for Penn State University Press proper.
Yeah, it's the other hats that I wear that we were talking about earlier. I manage an acquisitions department, so I'm overseeing the work of maybe six other editors on the academic publishing side of things. So yeah, I'm just trying to balance all of that and keep the pipeline moving ahead in Graphic Monday, but
Do you have
it's
other trade lists at PSU?
we have we don't have any other trade imprints, but we do occasionally publish trade titles in some of the subjects we publish in. So, for example, we have a Jewish studies list, and lately we've released some trade titles in Jewish studies that are books that are meant for more general readers. They don't present completely specialized scholarship. So yeah, and then also regional trade books about Pennsylvania and the Mid-Atlantic. We also publish those books from time to time on a trade discount. But I would say the vast majority of our list is, 80% of our list at least is scholarly academic.
Yeah, and just to stop down again for readers, when we talk about the trade discount, we mean that for general bookstores, they get a better discount than like a library or directly for course adoption in colleges, which is primarily what we're talking about here for the rest of PSU's list. You're not talking about textbooks in high school necessarily, though, some really
Right.
hard, smart high school students and smart teachers might assign them. We mean university adoption, where essentially the students are required to buy the books. And so they have, but they're much smaller print runs. I mean, 5,000 is a big print run for the Cobb Chronicles. Like, is that typical?
Yes, so that is, I will say, I didn't finish that thought. That's not typical for Graphic Mundi. Most of our other titles are coming, the print runs are coming in under that. I would say right now we're looking at 3,000 to 4,000 and hoping to go back to reprint. But on the academic side of things, we're looking at the hundreds of copies instead of thousands for the most part.
Right, these are more monographs. Yeah.
And this is the way it is. It's not just our press who's publishing in those quantities. It's pretty much all of University Press Publishing.
Yeah, and do you feel like the imprint, and this is maybe me projecting, you're able to take risks in a different way because you have the University Press grounding, you have the rest of the operation of University Press, than
Yeah,
say a small publisher just doing four titles a season, and that's all of their.
that is a one way to look at it. The more diversified a list, the more you can cover yourself when you take some losses, kind of like a financial portfolio. Having said that, publishing is kind of it's a challenging time, all across the board. So, yeah, it's tough, but we are committed. This is thoroughly mission driven, and really looking forward to keeping this line moving for many years to come.
What are some ways you're facing those challenges, and what can people who are interested in graphic medicine or just generally want to support a scholarly publisher publishing a trade list, can they do? What can your readers do to help spread the word?
That's really it. Spread the word. So word of mouth really helps. Social media obviously is a great way to spread positive ideas. So, use your own networks, readers. If you're interested in what we're doing, it would be great if you could use your own networks to get the word out about our titles. And visit us. Sign up for our newsletter if at graphicmundi.org if you're so inclined. And just keep an eye on our offerings. It's a big competitive marketplace, but I also think it's possible to carve out a niche of dedicated supporters who will ensure sustainability for what we're doing, and we're really grateful for that.
I also wanted to ask what you see as what you're really looking for, like a gap in your list. Like, are there particular topics or authors you're trying to get going forward? Do you have a space you're really, what's your wish list?
Agents ask me that a lot too, and I need to sit down and really think about that, because there's so much. I would like to see, so we are actively working to bring more to diversify the voices we bring to Graphic Mundi, and I feel like we need to build more in the Black voices area. So we have some titles in the works by creators of color that will be coming forward, but I do see that as a gap currently that I'm trying to work to fill. But I mean, nothing really comes to mind other than that, I guess, at this point. But if you, I would welcome If others see gaps and would like to be in touch and suggest, I would love to hear your ideas about what you want to read about.
And do you get submissions directly from cartoonists themselves, or do you only work through agents, literary agents?
It's a mix through cartoonists themselves. I get out to comics festivals and meet with creators, face to face, and we'll get their pitches at that time. I also field pitches from agents, so we're open to pitches from all sides.
That's a good reason to not to forego peer review, which takes, 6 months sometimes, and agents want you to get back to them the next day or two.
Yep, sure is.
Before we close, I wanted to ask if you had any other favorite title. I have a couple myself. I have to put a shout out for Rob Kirby's book, Marry
Love
Me
Rob
a Little.
Kirby's book.
Yeah, Marry Me a Little, which is a book that is about Rob's wedding and marriage and choice to marry his longtime partner. He's a gay man and his partner, he had been committed. And then when gay marriage was finally approved in the US and legalized, they did have a marriage. And it's a really kind of lovely meditation on what marriage means. But it's a book that came out in a way that I think really broke a lot of the ideals of ideas, not ideals, ideas of what Graphic Mundi was if it was just graphic medicine, right? It's not that there's anything just about graphic medicine, but it's not a graphic medicine book, right? So that's a book that I loved, and I wondered like how you saw that fitting into the larger imprint. And then if there's any others we wanted to shout out that might surprise people who are thinking of Graphic Mundi as just a continuation of the graphic medicine series.
Yeah, I mean that's Marry Me a Little is a wonderful book, by the way. I remember when Rob sent me his PDF, I remember getting to page 9 and saying, okay, I'm hooked. This is it. This is for us.
Beautiful
He's
artist.
it's such a serious story, but at the same time, he's just hilarious in kind of a in a wry way. Anyway, so I'm a huge fan. I mean, it's an important social issue that I think makes perfect sense on Graphic Mundi's list. So it just seemed like a natural to me. And I honestly, I didn't have to sell it to my colleagues. It seemed to jibe in everyone else's mind that as a good fit for Mundi. Another title that I'm partial to because I did the translation myself, but this is also a topic that's very close to my heart, is I Don't Want to Be a Mom by Irene Olmo. And this is a memoir about the making the choice to be child-free. In a society that often assumes that women will want to have children, or if women don't have children, there's something wrong with them. And she does a lovely job, first of all, showing the reader how she comes to terms with the fact that she doesn't decides not to have children and why, and then also demonstrating a good deal of resilience in the face of some just really preposterous situations that women sometimes find themselves in when they're grilled or judged, I guess you would say, for not having children. So this is a book that I think is a standout. And again, not a this kind of not a purely medical issue, much more of a social issue, although it does have to do with women's bodies, which again has renewed salience that topic these days. But yeah, happy to give a shout out for that title as well.
That book is got a great review at PW. And also I have to say, for someone who made the decision to be child free, she has a great lens on mommy group. She has some very funny mommy group jokes.
Yes,
She's
she
like
does.
passing through. Some fair criticism of the experience of people who decide not to have children, and as peers do, and that sense of distance that can arise of like being left out of an in-group. It's a great book for anybody thinking either way about where they fit in society as they enter this sort of rush of the baby rush that can happen in your 30s and 20s, depending on where you live. So I agree with that shout out. Well, thank you so much. We're watching your books very closely over here. I love the way that these these fit into so many different parts of the market, right? And I think that any list that can get course adoption and such interesting general adoption is really appealing to me and to PW's readers, which include booksellers and comic book shop retailers and librarians. So it's kind of a perfect fit for the sort of coverage we do. So we'll keep this conversation going. Thank you so
Yeah, thank
much.
you. Meg, I love that you get what we're doing. I really do. And I'm so appreciative for all of your support. So thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you.